It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello, and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany, this is my show, and today we are looking at Bound for Glory. And we're doing the review this week, not the preview. And joining me this week are my very special guest, Miss Chelsea Spoller, shouldersup.net. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you very much. And, of course, our local resident, WrestleTalk.tv, TNA expert, the man who's written more words about TNA than anyone else in pro wrestling history, Mr. Marcus Green of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. How are you, sir?
I'm good. And you, sir? Good to be back on the show.
I am. Yeah, it's great to hear from you, as always. And our favorite subject, as far as us two is concerned, is TNA. And Bound for Glory, we did the preview a couple of weeks ago. And there's been some interesting things or two about TNA in the wrestling press the last couple of weeks. I'm sure we'll
talk, a couple of tidbits.
Talk about that towards the end. But right now we'll go for a break.
WrestlePlus.com is the brand new home of incredible online wrestling content, featuring uncensored shoot interview classics, full series of WrestleTalk TV and British Wrestling Weekly, exclusive documentaries, British wrestling's biggest names before they were stars, an incredible podcast collection, up to 90% off merchandise offers, and the brand new Power Slammed e-magazine forwarded by Finn Martin himself. WrestlePlus has thousands of hours of content with new and exclusive releases added regularly. You can join today for the stupidly low price of just £4.99 a month. Wrestle Plus, because this is wrestling.
Welcome back. Talking Bound for Glory. Now, Chelsea, you're not a regular TNA fan, are you?
I'm not. This was my either fourth or fifth time watching a TNA product from start to finish, and it was my second TNA pay-per-view.
Which is very useful for us to have, is kind of like someone who's coming to it fresh.
An outsider perspective.
Yes, which we don't get very often on here, because me and Marcus, like, fans is the one word, suffragettes is another, from time to time. So we've been a bit haggard, so it's nice to get an extra voice come in on this and get us out of our mulch. Marcus,
happy to oblige.
Thank you. Marcus, what did you think of the show overall and the layup into the show?
I thought, you know, overall, they had a pretty good layup coming into the show amidst all the, you know, the seems like the hurricane of controversy in which they were embroiled in, and in the weeks prior, I think they delivered a pretty solid show, pretty, you know, good Bound for Glory, everything, you know, from top of the card to the bottom. Maybe a couple not overly exciting performances in a couple matches, but overall, I thought it was a pretty good show. Definitely better than, you know, some of the past years. So.
Yeah, I think we can probably go back to a couple of years ago being the low bar, and then, you know, the following year not making any sense in the storyline, and then last year's wasn't too bad, and this year's was reasonably good. What did you think of the overall projection of the show, Chelsea?
I'm glad that I watched it, and there were things that I liked, but my overall impression of it is that it felt very dated to me.
That's interesting. How did you feel it? How did it feel dated?
You know, it's hard to pinpoint one specific thing. I feel like the presentation of the product feels to me like some of the WWE stuff that I've seen from like the early 2000s, if that makes sense. I felt like some of the matches were good matches, but I sort of had like a question mark about why is that guy chosen to fight like that other specific guy? And some of that could just be that I'm not watching TNA on a regular basis, so I'm missing out on history that the wrestlers have with each other or storylines that have been built. But it felt to me a little bit like the era of Monday Night Raw, where they would just kind of like, oh, we're going to throw these two random guys together this week, and next week we're going to drop that and go back to another feud, you know, that really doesn't have a foundation in anything that we did 5 weeks ago. And the production values were... And I mean, everybody talks about that about TNA and they complain so much. And I try to be optimistic and positive about things like that, because I know that it's incredibly difficult to run a wrestling promotion with a TV contract and have all that stuff be as high end as possible. I mean, it's just so expensive. But it felt to me a little bit like they just didn't totally know what they were doing.
That's an interesting observation, because I was talking with Ben Spindler a couple of months ago when we talked about Final Deletion. And Ben's overarching issue is a lot of the guys in TNA have like this generic wrestler look.
Right.
And funnily enough, of WWE 2005 generic wrestler look. And
yep.
I kind of agree with him there. And it's interesting someone else say the same thing, but from a different angle. Yeah, it's probably something me and Marcus don't see, because we spent so much time picking apart the angles.
Right.
Do you see what I mean, Marcus?
Yeah, it is an interesting take. I was thinking about that when she was giving her opinion, because we're so embroiled in the product, and me, James, and others literally survived the Bischoff Hogan era. So now a lot of times we see them kind of really just crawling out of piles of crap, and just them being consistent with the little things we take as successes, because essentially we have to. So.
Yeah.
It's interesting hearing that perspective.
Yeah, it's like, for us, it's like, well, they managed to tell a story and there was no plot loopholes in it that were big enough to drive a 10-ton truck through, so therefore they're doing better than they did last time.
And Eric Bischoff didn't say anything, so that was a bonus also.
Nobody was coming from under the ring in the middle of a main event during a cage match. So.
No. That was Magnus's title reign. Wasted opportunity. Anyway. Sorry. let's go to the show. First up was Jade and Sienna in a dark match. Why that wasn't on the show, I have no idea, and it should have been.
Why wasn't that on the show? I love him so much.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah. So, right. They've already killed all three of us for a start. Let's go to the show that was on the show. DJZ successfully defended his X Division Championship against Trevor Lee in a match that was pretty good. The issue I have with it is there was no story to this match. We've had kind of like the Helmsley dynasty against DJZ has kind of been a background ongoing story-ish. But for your X Division champion, I think you deserve better. I think there could have been more to this. Marcus, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I kind of had to kind of take this match as is, because if anybody's been reading my talking points on Russell Talk TV, .TV, I've been calling for the longest time for them to get some storylines and feuds going in the division. It just seems like they're kind of just stagnant with it. So I had to kind of come into this, you know, pay-per-view just hoping to God it wasn't another multi-man match and that kicked off the show. So when we got this match and I kind of sat down and took it as is and I watched it, I was very much entertained and kind of happy with the match at the end of the day, because the X Division is known for that aerial high-impact sudden style, and these guys kind of brought a different flavor.
Yeah.
And I thought they delivered a really good match at the end of it.
Yeah, it just, we need some rivalry and some story, because otherwise it's just a bunch of X Division guys going, hey, we're cool, look how cool we are. And that's the only story they've got at the moment, and it needs more. Chelsea, what did you think of this?
So both of those guys are really good wrestlers. And I, you know, like my immediate impression was, wow, those guys are really talented. But I agree that it didn't feel like there was a story really being told, which was disappointing. I think one of the things that was sort of like an overarching theme of this pay-per-view for me is that commentary in TNA hypes up everything, like everything. And WWE does this too, but it's different with WWE because Michael Cole sounds like he's bored by absolutely everything. Josh Matthews tries to sound like he's excited by absolutely everything. And one of the deficits of that is that it doesn't give you a sense of what actually is great and what is important.
Yes.
And so I was watching this match thinking, like, I'm paying extra special attention to the commentary because I'm looking to commentary to give me some cues as to why it's special, why it's important, what story's being told. And I didn't get any of that information. So I was able to appreciate both of those wrestlers and them applying their craft very well. But I was sort of like, you know, I had this question mark of like, why am I watching this? Why are you showing this to me?
Tomorrow on the squash, I'll be talking with Gavin Duenas about what the new investors of TNA should be spending their money on. And the first thing I'm going to say is get rid of Josh Matthews.
Oh my God, please.
Replace him with
get
Little Pope.
Literally anybody else.
Yeah, what was that, Marcus?
Yeah, you can replace him with Little Pope.
I know Borash has a lot to do, but if you don't put Jeremy Borash as lead commentator on Impact Wrestling, no one will. Just do it. You know, hire another producer. I will pay for another producer for TNA if I have to,
Borash
Matthews.
Is doing everything else.
There's not one person Madison Rayne would do a better job. I know she's married to Josh Matthews, but, you know, get her to do it. But just get rid of Josh Matthews. I don't want to see him fired. I don't want anyone to be fired. I think, you know, everyone deserves a job. But he could be a producer. He could put the ring up. He could do numerous other things that would keep him away from a microphone. Marcus, do you agree?
No, I agree. I think he would do. I think if you switch those roles in terms of him and JB, put JB on commentary and have him kind of doing backstage interviews.
Yeah.
I think that'll be a welcome switch because, you know, JB has, you know, been there for so many years, and much like Pope, he has a lot of history with these guys. Like I said, it feels like at times JB is doing everything else.
Yeah.
As well. So, you know, it'll just be one more thing for him to do, and won't hurt our ears. So.
No, and also if you've got the producer of the segments commentating on the segments, they make much more sense.
Exactly.
You know, but
I was also going to suggest, just like random off the top of my head, Joey Styles might be good.
It's a possibility. He's currently under contract to Evolve and Chikara, though.
I mean, but he's taking bookings from other promotions based on his Twitter page.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think he's exclusive.
Yeah, I think someone asked him about that, and I think he it kind of, you know, a polite decline, kind of happy way what he's doing right now type of thing. Although he did give a suggestion, like the first thing he would do is be like overhaul the entire social media, or lack thereof.
Completely
rebrand that horrid website.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, Joey would be the guy.
Yeah.
Who could do it. And there's probably a couple of others the guys who commentate for Paragon, they're pretty good as well, because they're nuts and bolts commentators, you know, which is Josh just doesn't have that experience. He just can't call a match and sell the things he sees in front of him. Everything's the greatest thing ever. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. You just can't, because otherwise everything's great. When's the stuff not great?
Yeah, I think he already had a little stink on him coming into TNA, because I think as soon as not too long after he signed with TNA, he got into that scuttlebutt with JR.
Yeah.
So that was the whole thing. Like, you can't be, you know, a medium to moderate commentator and then insult one of the greatest of all time.
It just doesn't work like that. No. But yeah, so I don't want to spend all the time talking about Josh Matthews, but it is something that's got to be sorted sooner or later, because it's driving me insane. You know, and Pope's okay. I don't dislike Pope, but he's basically commenting on what Josh says. And if Josh says something insipid, what's the Pope got to do? He can't, like, you know, can't.
He spends most of his time curving or correcting Matthew.
Yeah. Okay, let's move.
Reverse JBL.
Yes, that's basically it. Yeah. Move on to match three. Eli Drake won a 10-man Bound for Gold gauntlet match, which is the usual Bound for Glory filler. We can't think of anything else to do with these guys, so we'll stick them in one match. Here's a question. Aiden O'Shea was in last year's gauntlet match. Haven't seen him since. Marcus?
You will be seeing him coming up on a more recent show.
Okay.
Following. So I'll be, you know, interested to see your take on that. But yeah, the Bound for Gold match, gauntlet match is... just, you know, it's, you know, like I talked about before, one of them run-of-the-mill matches that will no way steal the show contenders. But it did highlight guys, you know, like, you know, the Bromans and the Tribunal. And we got that little funny, hilarious spot from Grado. But, you know, it was just your run-of-the-mill stuff. And at the end of the day, I think the thing I liked most about the match was the ending. You know, getting Drake a win.
So. That's true. I mean, we've been, I begged for a Jesse Goddard push last time we talked about on the preview, actually. And this was great to see him have a long, extended 15 minutes in the whole match. Really got himself over, and I really enjoyed his work. And of course, you know, Grado's Bushwhacker Luke impression was fantastic, as Grado usually is. Chelsea, what did you make of this?
I like Eli Drake. Tyrus is a snooze fest for me. just totally, totally done with that guy. I was like, oh, yeah, no. What was the name of the guy who got eliminated immediately and everybody left?
Grado.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was disappointed that he got eliminated immediately, and not because I know anything about that guy, but because the crowd actually reacted to him, and they don't to anything else.
Yep, because Grado's king face. He's the best. I honestly think Grado is the best pure face British wrestling's produced in 20 years.
Is he the Toru Yano of TNA?
He is. And in ICW November last year, they put on the biggest independent card in Scotland, and they filled 6,000-seater Hydro Stadium with Grado versus Drew Galloway for the ICW Heavyweight Championship.
Wow.
There you go. He's that good. If TNA could harness that, which they apparently don't know how to do.
So why did he get eliminated immediately? What the hell?
Yeah, because he's basically TNA Santino Marella, for those of you familiar with that. And it's just like he's kind of stuck in that role. I mean, he has moments of brilliance, and they allow him to have like little moments, but that's about it.
Yeah, but if you tell the story right, he could be a guy. You know, it's just accepting that a comedy guy. You're still getting that stuck with funny don't equal money. Well, it can do if you do it right. But there you go. So that was the 10-man gauntlet match, which, as it got Eli Drake over, which gives him a world title shot somewhere down the line, which I'm kind of pleased about, because Eli Drake's worked very hard, I think, this year to get himself over in TNA. The next match was Moose versus Mike Bennett, which was one of the matches, which is a proper personal issues match. You know, this was a match that was very much around about Mike Bennett's distrust of Moose and his eventual dismissal of Moose after bringing him into TNA. It was a good old-fashioned personal issues make money match. I'll go with Chelsea first. What was your impressions of this one? And were you familiar with these guys in Ring of Honor?
So I'm familiar with Moose on his own, and I'm familiar with Mike Bennett on his own. And it was a little weird to me when I went looking to find out what their personal history from Ring of Honor was, to discover there really wasn't that much that I could find.
Mm.
A lot of people on Twitter were saying that they were confused about that also. In particular, my friend Kate Ferrey was saying that she was confused about why that was like the underpinnings of this story. I like both of those guys. To me, Moose is the more interesting, more charismatic guy. Mike Bennett is, to me, my impression of him is like he's good on a microphone. But
yeah,
his wrestling just isn't that interesting to me. I mean, it's good. I don't want to say, like, you know, that I think he's bad or anything. He just, to me, he's missing that X factor. Moose has charisma in spades.
Yeah, definitely. I think Bennett has to be with the right person to get them, to get him really motivated and going. The matches he had with EC3 were way better than this was. And I think, you know, I think Moose did well here. But again, it was dragging a little bit for me, but I think Moose put in a good performance, got himself over, got his moveset over, more familiar with what they're trying to do. Bennett is still King Heel in TNA. He's still the guy that aggravates and grates the most, and that's what the fans really hate about him, which is a good thing. Marcus, what did you think of this matchup?
Yeah, I liked this match. I thought it exceeded my expectations, because I really didn't have any too many coming in, but Bennett, for me, he's serviceable in his role. I think very much agree with James that he's better depending on the guy he's working with. And I appreciate a guy like Moose, who kind of, you know, brought a little presentation to his the show with the whole football thing. I always appreciate when guys kind of up that factor when it comes to these pay-per-views. So, yeah, I thought it was a good outing for Moose. He really looked good. And I thought, Bennett continues to be a good foil as he continues kind of his downward spiral following his feud with EC3. I could definitely see these two doing some more stuff down the line.
The end of this matchup, Mike Bennett was on the microphone saying he was going to ruin TNA. And then Cody Rhodes and his partner Brandy came down to the ring and made his debut for TNA, which was interesting and certainly sparked the crowd, who were well into this particular debut. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, I liked it. It's kind of refreshing to see Cody in this role, along with his wife, who really has been aspiring to be an in-ring performer for some time. For a lot of people who may not be familiar with her, but I thought it was cool. Presentation was nice. I really like his theme music, and it's gonna be interesting seeing this kind of power couple dynamic that we get. I think it's kind of ready made as soon as you saw these two. So it'll be interesting to see exactly what they can do, either in singles or, you know, mixed gender tags. So I liked it.
What did you think, Chelsea? Because is this a good signing for TNA, and is it a good position for Cody Rhodes?
I'm really excited for Cody Rhodes. And I mean, he came off as like a as like a super baby face, you know, like he got the big entrance music and like he walked in with his wife at his side and he was treated very seriously. Like he's a serious competitor, which is something he didn't get in WWE for most of his tenure there. So that was nice. I do think he is a draw for TNA because I think I'm not the only WWE fan who was really excited when he left to do something else. You know, like we all know that guy has a ton of potential and we haven't really seen everything he can do yet. Also, I gotta say, I was really excited to see Brandi dressed to wrestle.
Yeah.
She's been posting videos on Instagram of training. She trained with Chris Hero the other day, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And her costume, I looked this up, her wrestling gear was actually made for her by Sandra Gray, who's the woman who did WWE's costumes for a number of years. It was made for her when she was working in, I want to say, FCW.
Right, yeah.
And she never wore it before because WWE never gave her the opportunity to wear it before. I was actually really hoping we were going to get to see her wrestle, but it seems like they're probably saving that and they want you to get excited about it.
Yeah. And they have blown things like that so many times in the past, like announcing things and then just giving it away too early. So I'm kind of glad they held back on that.
It's a
good thing, really. Right, we'll move on next to Aaron Rex defeating Eddie Edwards in a split decision for the Impact Grand Championship in 15 minutes on a time limit draw. This was interesting. Drew Galloway received an injury before the pay-per-view started and could not compete. He was there to cut a promo and did his usual Drew Galloway thing, which was very, very good indeed. But Aaron Rex and Eddie Edwards was an interesting match. It was a pretty much straight, pure wrestling match, which you don't get very often in mainstream wrestling in North America, to be honest. And it was interesting from a crowd reaction point of view. They seemed to be very much behind Aaron Rex, but they were also equally behind Eddie Edwards. And it was interesting to see the crowd dynamic. The match itself was very, very good, as you'd expect from these two wrestlers. And I really still do like the Impact Grand Championship rules, the three-round system, the points that they award. You're guaranteed a winner at the end of the three rounds. I think it's a very interesting way of presenting wrestling, and I like the fact that they've seemed to have set it apart, whereas even the heels don't really cheat that much. There's no interference or things like that. How long they can keep that going, I'm not really sure. But again, if you set up these boundaries and make them part of the zeitgeist of the division, then breaking the rules becomes so much more important. So I think it's really good, strong storytelling and a good example of what Billy Corgan's done well with the promotion since he took over. Marcus, what did you think of this matchup?
Yeah, 100% agree. It kind of sucks because we've been really getting that intense build with him and Galloway. But it kind of creates a ready-made thing. For Galloway to go right back into, should Rex still be champion when he heals. But I thought Eddie Edwards really stepped up, and maybe it was just me being, you know, at home fourth judge, but it kind of looked like he kind of won in the end for me, but obviously it didn't go that way. But yeah, so it was cool. Like you said, everything, you know, so far with this, the whole rules and everything has been good, and they executing. With TNA, it's just about staying consistent with the guidelines that they set for their own company and with their matches. So, you know, I think they've gotten off to a great start with this Impact Grand Championship. And, you know, as long as these matches stay, you know, competitive and on a consistent basis with guys like Rex who could really use the boost, I think they could go far with it.
Chelsea, what did you think of this? Because I know you had some interesting things to say when you were live tweeting it about Aaron Rex and his time in TNA since being in WWE.
So first of all, I'm really happy for him that he has found something to do outside of WWE that is involved in wrestling still, because I know he's so passionate about it. It was a more technical match than I think I've used to seeing from him, which was cool. I think there were two things that were lacking for me about this. You guys mentioned that you really liked the structure of the match and the points system. And I think maybe this is because I haven't seen a lot of TNA, but for me, that was actually a little confusing because I was sort of like, right, how are the points calculated? It just sort of felt like, oh, there's going to be a round, but it's not going to be clear until commentary tells us like, oh, this guy won. To me, that sort of took me out of the story a little bit. But I mean, like, again, maybe it's just that I'm not used to the format. The other thing that was kind of weird for me is I felt like, you know, for Aaron Rex or Damian Sandow to have come from WWE, and he's sort of getting like a resurgence of his career, and he did like this independent tour, and he got an interview in Rolling Stone. Like, all these big things have happened for him that really are sort of not guaranteed for you when you leave WWE, right? Like, that's, he could have just left and we could have never heard from him again, really. I was hoping he was going to get the moment of like the big emotional, you won the championship, everybody cries and cheers for you. And maybe it's because his opponent wasn't who they originally wanted. But that moment didn't happen for me.
No.
He seemed very grateful to win, but there was no big emotional moment. And to me, a lot of times that's what makes the title wins feel real.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you there. I think the issue for the Grand Championship ruling comes down to commentary again. You know, it wasn't explained well enough. Me and Marcus watch every week, so we know what's going on. But there's people who'll buy Bound for Glory just like they buy WrestleMania. It's the big event of the year. Yeah, we'll buy that. So why can't you explain it properly? You know, there are maybe people who buying that pay-per-view had never seen the Grand Championship before. They should have explained it better. I know it's grating for a long-term audience when you know what the rules are. But equally, there are people who may not have seen it yet, and it's only a month old. And this goes back to what we said when they inaugurated the championship and the championship tournament was founded a month ago. It was like, here's the belt, here's the rules, bye! And that was Billy Corgan out the ring. You know, it's the same thing happening again and again. Just like, you've got this cool thing. Spend some time explaining this cool thing. You know, and
yeah,
maybe we'll think it's a cool thing too, but if you don't tell us it's a cool thing, how do we know it's a cool thing?
Or like, you know, explain why those characters are emotionally invested in that thing, and that will make it a cooler thing.
Yeah, and that didn't really happen. And she goes again back to Josh Matthews being rubbish. But Aaron Rex, yeah, I agree with you in the sense of I think he kind of dropped unlucky with, not that Eddie Edwards is a bad wrestler, he's a phenomenal wrestler, but he's a very popular wrestler. If it had been anyone else, really, but Eddie, I think you might have got that feeling, you know, certainly if it had been another heel, he definitely would have had that feeling of accomplishment and like, yeah, here's my redemption. Whereas with Eddie, it's kind of like, yeah, but you beat one of the guys we like, so yay. So it's
also, I sort of want to ask, because I know, James, I know you're not a huge WWE fan, but am I the only one who missed the comedy that Sandow or Aaron Rex is sort of known for?
He's very earnest, this character, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, there's not a sense of light relief with him, certainly.
Yeah, I think he has moments of levity, but I think because he got stuck in that role for so long, he's very much trying to, you know, kind of elevate his seriousness and more so deliver on his in-ring, because we, like you said, it was kind of your first time really seeing him in that long tenure of a match on, you know, technically.
Right.
So I think that's kind of where his focus is now, really, you know, improving his credibility in the ring, because I think the one of the best matches he had in WWE was when he cashed in against John Cena. That was like one of the longest matches that I've seen him have. So, it's really cool to see him get this opportunity so he can, you know, bring that credibility, you know, to his wrestling.
I think the only reason I miss the comedy is just that he, in WWE, with all those comedy bits that he did, he just had such an effortless connection with the audience.
Yeah.
And really, actually, now that I think about it, it's pretty impressive, frankly, that he's willing to work to get that, you know, through a less accessible route. You know, he's willing to start over so that he can prove himself in it, like you were saying, in another way, which is, I mean, very, very admirable. I guess I was just a little bit like, oh, you know, I kind of miss him, like as the
yeah,
silly,
don't miss,
funny guy.
Yeah.
Right, like every time you see that guy in WWE, you know you're supposed to laugh, and I miss that a little bit.
Oh, well, maybe down the line he'll bring that back a little bit, because, you know, you got to mix these things up, haven't you? So
yeah.
Right then, let's strap ourselves in for another Hardy's adventure. Matt Hardy and Brother Nero defeat Decay for the TNA World Tag Team Championships in the Great War. 22 minutes and 28 seconds. Okay, Marcus, what did you think?
Yeah, I know James has to literally suffer through these things. But I thought, you know, I didn't think they could outdo, you know, the leader of Decay, or, you know, obviously the final deletion, but they found a way to bring a completely different element to this third installment. Again, outrageous, controlled chaos is the best way I can describe it. And, you know, again, probably the most entertaining thing a lot of people saw throughout the night. And it was just, you know, the Hardys, you know, at the top of their, I guess, creativity and, versus the decay. And, you know, I laughed, I turned my head, I shook my head, you know, it brought a lot of emotions out. And at the end of the day, we are once again, presented with the Hardys being, you know, tag team champions, and it really brought the story full circle. Because if you think about it, this whole thing really started, with this whole broken persona and everything really started, really once Matt kind of fell off that whole world title stint, and then he got off into this feud with his brother, and obviously that brought on his broken condition. So, you know, I think everything, you know, just kind of culminated. I thought they, you know, had a hell of a start with that three-way miss. The Rebbe was sick.
Yeah.
And everything they kind of did throughout. And it, obviously fighting on the back of a truck and, you know, bringing in Vanguard 1 to, you know, do something that was not exactly PG for a drone. But, yeah, I just thought it was an all-around dark circus performance. And, you know, I thought it delivered, so.
I'm having this thought about the whole thing now, right? These videos, right? If you look back to the history of WCW, fighting on the back of a truck is what got Dustin Rhodes and Dusty Rhodes fired from WCW. Because there was that...
Really?
Yeah. He had a match with the Blackstreet Bully, which was Demolition Axe. No, sorry, Demolition Smash. Barry Darso and Repo Man. In WCW, they had a blood feud, and they ended up having a match in the back of a 40-foot low-loader trailer, which had a cage on it, which was broadcast during the pay-per-view and is classed as one of the worst cage matches of all time. And the reason why Dusty and Dustin got fired was because Dustin bladed in that match. And as Dusty was the producer at the time, he got fired along with Dustin. And that's the reason why Goldust exists. So to me, it's like they've taken all the worst bits WCW ever did and have put them into this match. So I'm not going to go on the rant yet. I'll let Chelsea speak first. Chelsea, how did you feel about the Great War?
So I definitely don't have as much context for it as you do, and that may be why I enjoyed it more.
Yes, yeah, I can see that.
To me, the thing that I like about Broken Matt Hardy is that he seems like he takes a lot of the things that are lacking about TNA, and he makes them seem not just intentional, but fun. Like, the low production values don't seem like they're, you know, oh, TNA doesn't have the money to make everything look better. It seems like, oh, this is a bad B-movie, and it's supposed to be cheesy. I liked that. It's sort of esoteric in a way that most things in wrestling kind of can't be. Mm. I liked some of the comedy stuff. I liked that they smashed some pumpkins. they did that, and I laughed. I liked the decay, even though I hadn't really seen that much of them before. I got excited about Rosemary because she seems like she has a really big presence, and I know that from her career prior to TNA that she's a good wrestler. So I liked seeing her do like the crazy goth girl thing with the zombie walk. I thought that was neat. I was actually kind of hoping that she and Rebbe were going to get into it, and I was a little disappointed when they didn't. But you know me, I'm always looking for more women's wrestling. There's never enough women's wrestling in a show for me. So I don't know. I liked this match. It made me laugh. It had throwbacks to things that I understood, you know, like Jeff doing the Swanton bomb off the ladder. I was like, oh, okay, that's Jeff Hardy. He has to do that. I liked the Hardys getting that big reaction out of the crowd because, again, like the TNA crowd seems to be just so desensitized to everything.
Mm.
And I agree with what a lot of people have said on Twitter, which is that if TNA is well and truly done for, it would be interesting if the Hardys were involved in its final deletion, so to speak.
Yeah, I'll go with my opinion now. As regular long-time listeners to this show will understand how much I don't like the current incarnation of the Hardys in these matches and this thing that they've got going on at the moment. There are bits in it I do like. I do like Decay a lot. I think Crazy Steve has really come out as his shell in the last 12 months and has turned into an incredibly productive worker, as usual, by doing less and speaking more. I think Rosemary's awesome. I think Abyss has had a real renaissance year. And 2 weeks ago, we talked about this is another great comeback for Abyss when a guy who was supposed to be done 5 years ago. I like the fact it's logical within its own universe, but I dislike the fact it's illogical within the TNA universe. And that's my big issue mm-hmm. with it. And I've explained this many times, so I'll not rant any more than that. I genuinely don't like this kind of presentation in one sense, and just because it takes me out the moment, because they're outside the arena and it's clearly been taped beforehand, and I'm too much of a long-term wrestling fan to enjoy it, I think, if you see what I mean. Like, the crazy stuff we see in Lucha Underground, the crazy stuff we see in Chikara never takes place actually in the ring. It's always in the segments in between that links everything together, or the stories are told elsewhere, or via blogs or YouTube videos, or there's a way of telling these stories without it really affecting the wrestling match, and that's what I dislike about it. The other thing, and this is a very simple thing, it's something my dad pointed out to me actually earlier today when I was having dinner with him and asked him about this match, because he absolutely despises this, as Marcus knows. his point was, how come pinfalls count anywhere matches always end in the ring? Can anyone explain that to him?
Yeah, that seems like kind of a waste.
This is true.
Yeah, you know, I remember the Cactus Jack, Abdullah the Butcher matches of the early 90s, and Abdullah would get pinned in a water trough, or Cactus would get pinned on a beach somewhere. And I'd like to see some more of that. Just basic logic of, well, you know, if essentially, if you're brawling for 20 minutes and the match is roughly, regular matches roughly usually last around about 10 to 15 minutes, then someone's got to get beat somewhere. You're probably not going to be in the ring when it happens. So just to put some little logic in there, I know it's nice for TV cameras, but every once in a while, just do something slightly different. So that this isn't any different. Anyone want to say anything else on the Great War?
No, I agree. I agree with everyone, even your points. I mean, it does, you know, at times it is very much else world. And when you go that far out and then you try to hone it back in, following this with a regular wrestling match, it kind of really can throw off the vibe. But, you know, like you said, it fits in the world of creator, but it doesn't at the same time. But at the same time, it's like the reason why a lot of eyes have gotten back on TNA, unfortunately.
Mm.
But, you know, which is cool. You know, I commend, you know, give all the credit in the world to Matt Hardy for really doing what he's done to kind of reinvent himself and bringing this much attention and then kind of, you know, really branch this whole thing out in the wrestling in general. I mean, I was watching the latest Ring of Honor pay-per-view, All-Star Extravaganza, and they had Bobby Fish walking up into a camera and going, hit him with the hind. the whole thing between, you know, shadowing back to the kangaroo smoking Joe and everything. Yeah. So, you know, kudos to him for really just creating major buzz around himself and bringing attention to TNA at such a tumultuous time.
And especially as Chelsea just said, you know, you're enjoying the show, aren't you? You're enjoying this particular portion of the show, and it's brought you to the wider TNA show.
Yeah.
Okay, one person who did have a phenomenal evening was Gail Kim. She was inducted into the TNA Hall of Fame.
Yay!
And I think that's well deserved. Gail has been revolutionary in North American wrestling in the last 20 years. She really has been the linchpin of TNA's women's division, and I offer her great praise and thanks for her time in the squared circle. She did some fantastic. She has done some fantastic things, and I'm sure she will do more fantastic things as time goes on. And she had a match with Maria Kanellis, 5 minutes 19 seconds. And what was obviously not going to be a great technical wrestling match, but was a great event style wrestling match. This was actually something well worth watching for showing you how to get the most out of very, very little. And I've got some things to say about this match afterwards, which pertain to the main event. But yeah, this match was very good for what it was, even though it wasn't supposed to be a great wrestling match. What did you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. By no means was I expecting this to be a 20-something minute slug-em-out, you know, wrestling classic, just because of, you know, what we've been getting for the past few months. But again, that's kind of the point. I mean, we had a lot of elements in this match that's kind of been building. Obviously, you got Maria basically trying to bag out of everything, but you kind of had the caveat with Allie, who really is now at the kind of foundation of it, and kind of as we see her evolution, you know, being, you know, basically disrespected week after week. So, You know, I thought it was great, you know, having Kim finally get some retribution, which was the point. She finally got her hands on Maria and, you know, everything involving that and, you know, having that follow the, you know, her great Hall of Fame induction, I thought was really cool. And, you know, she deserves all the, you know, the praise and all her accolades. So, like you said, I think it was a fitting ending to what seems like, you know, a 9-month build to this one match.
Yeah,
and I thought the crowd was into it as well.
What did you think, Chelsea?
So, first of all, I love Gail Kim, and she's awesome. And the primary exposure I have to TNA, aside from the few things I watched from start to finish, is looking up the women's wrestling matches, because TNA let the women have real matches long before it occurred to basically anybody else to do that on television. Anyway, I was disappointed that this was so short, and I like Maria. I'm not questioning whether or not she has a place in the TNA product, because obviously she does a lot for them. You know, she's a good valet. She's a good character. She makes her husband more interesting. But I really wish that Gail had had a match with someone who was more of a wrestler. TNA have them. You know, they have women in their knockout division who could have had like a barn burner with Gail on the night of her induction ceremony. They could have had, you know, Mia Yim or Allie. That would have been really cool. I get that Gail winning was kind of a foregone conclusion anyway, given they were inducting her into the Hall of Fame, but they could have told that story differently. You know, they could have had it be a contentious thing. Somebody could have interrupted during Gail's induction ceremony and challenged her. You know, I don't know. They could have done it differently and had more of a match out of it. That said, you know, it wasn't the end of the world that they didn't. And I'm really happy for Gail Kim that she's getting recognition from TNA for having done so much for the company, because she definitely deserves it.
Yeah, I think I've been of the same mind of you for a long while. This match kind of salvaged what they're doing, because the fans were really so into this match. In fact, more into this match than anything else on this card. I would agree with you. The trouble is, you were right to say Ali. The trouble is, Ali's character is she can't wrestle.
Which is, why? Why? She's so good. Why would you do that?
Because I don't know.
There's no good reason to do that.
It almost feels like they're kind of mimicking kind of what they did with Sput.
Yeah, yeah.
With Dixie, it's just, you know, it takes a little time, and we finally did get that fantastic match he had with EC3, but it just took a while.
Yeah, I can understand that, but it just frustrates you because Ali's that good, and
it's not the same when you do that with a female wrestler. It's not the same, because any woman who works in wrestling has to eat 10 times as much crap in order to just be there in general, whether she works as a valet or wants to be a serious wrestler who is taken seriously.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that TNA has a more level playing field for something like that than WWE, where WWE has had, I can't even think of, you know, how many female characters they've had where the point is that she's not a great wrestler, she's just a hot model.
Yeah.
But it's very frustrating, because I know how good Allie really is, and I want her to get a chance to prove herself that way to the portion of the audience that hasn't been lucky enough to see how good she really is.
No, I completely agree. And it's something that's grated on me. Yeah, that Brittany was the first example of this, which really grated on me, because I knew how good Santana Garrett was. You know, I'd seen her wrestle indies. She's fantastic. And her original gimmick in TNA was that she was a rookie who didn't know what she was doing. Then why did you hire in the first place? hire someone who's good then. What are you doing? That doesn't make any logical sense. Why are you hiring rubbish wrestlers? You know, and then it evolved to she was the jealous rookie who got further, and it's like she had a match with Madison Rayne that was better than anything else for the rest of the month in TNA. And then, you know,
unsurprising.
Yeah, and it's funny, because like TNA fans don't react. Me and Matt Roberts, who is a British wrestling writer, we reviewed Knockouts Knockdown a couple of years ago, and it was funny because Matt writes from a different perspective than to me, because he tends to concentrate on mainstream wrestling, and we compared notes afterwards. We showed each other we like tweet shared our two articles for WrestleTalk TV, and I can't remember who was writing for, but I think it was Total Wrestling, and everything he liked, I despised, and everything I liked, he despised. It was like,
I love it.
My favorite match of the night was Mia Yim versus Santana Garrett, and he hated it.
Oh my god!
And it's like, what's wrong with you? But yeah, I don't understand it. But I mean, I liked this match. You're right; it could have been longer. And I think, but Maria is the absolute heat magnet in TNA at the moment. She's more of a heat magnet than Mike Bennett is. And actually, what I was thinking was this should have been the main event. And when you when you look at the crowd reaction for Lashley versus Ethan Carter, this should have been the main event of Bound for Glory this year. You know, and you could have stretched it out. You could have had interference to make it 20 minutes long. That wouldn't have been a problem. And it would have been thoroughly entertaining. And at least the crowd would not have fallen asleep, which I can't say the same about for the main event. But that's just me. Am I being harsh, Marcus?
No, I think a lot of times that TNA crowd it's kind of, you know, very much hit or miss, and kind of a lot of times can take away from the show in certain instances, because, you know, much like Chelsea said, a lot of times they really do seem dead for most of the show, and then when they do, you know, kind of liven up, it's like, okay, and then, you know, obviously when the main event, they kind of kick it down. So even if some of the matches are really good, the crowd's, you know, lack of enthusiasm for it can really take away from it.
Yeah. I have a question about that, actually. I read somewhere that TNA is not allowed to sell tickets for money. Like, they can give away tickets, but they're not allowed to sell tickets to the venue that they tape their TV shows in.
Yeah,
is that true? Zone.
It may well be true. I know it's supposed to be an attraction of the park, you know, because it's Universal Studios, so it's an attraction of Universal Studios.
So I sort of wonder if that's part of why the crowd sucks so much. Because the crowd sucks in every TNA thing I've ever seen. It's just, it's depressing, frankly, because a lot of times you're watching these really great wrestlers have sometimes a really excellent match that I want to get, like, excited about, and the crowd is just, like, not paying attention at all.
Yeah, no. And it's more noticeable now that they're allowed to do third-party bookings. So, like, Ethan Carter and Drew Galloway will go wrestle for Evolve in front of a cracking hot crowd in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then they'll go back to TNA and they'll do exactly the same things, and it feels like, meh.
Yeah, but it's the same thing and exactly the same people. Like, I've been looking for the past number of months at the same particular female in the same particular spot with curly hair, and I'm like, she's literally at all these tapings, and it's like, even as hot as something like NXT is, those tapings can be exhausting and they can be grating. Yeah. And a lot of times when these people are tourists and they're not exactly embroiled in the product, it can take away from it. Like, I think one of the best crowds they had, you know, years ago was when they brought Slammiversary, I think it was, to Texas.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was a really cracking show.
It was Arlington. And they had Kevin Von Erich and his sons on the show as well. They went, I can't remember, did they say Wrestle the Ascension, I think? Yeah.
I forgot who they wrestled. But yeah. That was that show. And I think a lot of times, just getting some fresh eyes, fresh perspective from fans on these shows can really do, you know, wonders for them. But this is kind of the hole that they're essentially in. So
yeah, I know.
And Texas wrestling fans are so devoted. Like, that's a good call.
Yeah, I know it's cheap. I know it's cheaper to run Bound for Glory at the Impact Zone. It has to be, or else why would they do it? Because they're in the hole by a lot. They need to save money wherever they can. But it doesn't make it feel like a big event. And it goes back to what you were saying, Chelsea, about Josh Matthews. He doesn't make the event feel like a big event. This kind of felt like a long episode of Impact in one sense. You know, it didn't feel different because it's still in the Impact Zone with the same graphics, except for the Bound for Glory graphics, and the interviews are shorter. And yeah, there wasn't the snappiness to it that Bound for Glory needs to be seen as the big presentation show of the year.
And you're not going to get the level of excitement from the front row if they're always there at every Impact Zone taping that you get from a WWE show, where you have somebody who spent $5,000 on a front row ticket 6 months ago, and this is the thing they've been looking forward to the whole time, and they're just determined to enjoy it the whole time.
Yeah,
exactly.
But we'll move on to the main event, even though we've kind of spoiled it by saying it was a bit flat. Because it was. I mean, Lashley versus Ethan Carter III. It was a match I was actually genuinely looking forward to. I thought this was going to be really, really good. And the actual match content was good. The trouble was the crowd were dead. And you watch that match, and Ethan Carter was pulling out some stuff, and I know why he was pulling out some moves, because he was trying to get a reaction from the crowd, and it wasn't working. And it's really unfortunate, because I thought it was a very, very good match. I think they could probably do better, and were kind of put off their guard by the crowd that was just tired out and worn out. I don't know. What did you think, Marcus?
I 100% agree. I thought it was a really good match. I think, you know, those two guys really added some different elements, especially Lashley with that just random spear out of nowhere, to start the match. I thought it was a really great spot. And, you know, stuff throughout the match, like you said, Ethan adding a lot of different stuff to his repertoire, if you will, coming off the ropes with a frog splash. We never get that from Supreme, but like you said, the crowd was just dead, and it almost made this match look mediocre, and it was anything but that, because I thought it was a very good match that these two put on, especially with that ending spot. So, you know, again, it's the freaking Orlando strikes again. Impact Zone crowd strikes again. And it's really sad, because I think these are definitely two of the best guys in the company. Lashley has had an absolute amazing, reign and year. But, it just didn't have that oomph that it really could have had because of the crowd.
Yeah, and it's just so annoying, because it's happened to EC3 a couple of times when he lost to Mike Bennett and lost his undefeated streak earlier in the year. And the crowd just like, oh.
Yeah, you can't even pan to the crowd to get the faces. Like, one of the you know, I know we always kind of crack on WWE, but a lot of times what they can get is great reactions. Like the time Miz became champion, the Miz girl.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. and they use that, and they still use that to this day, but you can't really get that, you know, with that Orlando crowd, because like you said, they've been there for however many times for free. And, you know, they've been there for however long. So you really just kind of get that in the doldrums kind of feel. And they can't even really pan around to the crowd, because it's a few people in the first few rows, and everybody in the back is just kind of looking dumbfounded.
What did you think of it, Chelsea, as a main event itself?
I think both of those guys are tremendous athletes and obviously really great wrestlers. But I felt like I was falling asleep for most of this. And I felt bad, honestly, because I could tell that both of them were so good, and I could tell that both of them were so committed. I sort of actually wondered if maybe their styles were a little too similar for me to get excited watching them wrestle. I tend to prefer it when there's more of like a clash, you know?
Yeah.
That could just be my personal taste. But I didn't feel like it was presented in a way that made it exciting. And I mean, everything you guys said about the audience and the commentary sort of failing them. I was sad for them that they didn't get a bigger reaction. And I was sad, frankly, that I couldn't give them a bigger reaction, because I wanted to. I wanted to like it. You know, I know Lashley and Ethan Carter are both really, really amazing. Like I know that from, you know, their reputations before I even actually sit down to watch a match that either of them are involved in. But it was boring, and it didn't have to be.
Yeah, and you know, and they did all the right things. Like the build up, they kept them apart for months on end, they teased things here and there, they had the big press conference with the stare down and the fight in the press conference. They did everything you could to make this match work the way it was supposed to work as a main event for a pay-per-view. And then there's just this thing didn't work and this thing didn't work. And then the Gail and Maria match was so much more emotionally involved, and the fans were worn out and therefore it ends. But if they swapped it around, it would have been fine. How Ethan and Lashley would have dealt with going on after Gail Kim and Maria, I don't know. But that's their problem.
If you have to follow Gail Kim, I feel sorry for you, just in general.
So yeah, but there you go. It's just kind of a bit of a disappointing end to a pay-per-view that was okay. It wasn't great. It wasn't as memorable as Sunbound for Glories, but everything on there kind of worked one way or another, and it's been pretty much the story of TNA in recent months. Everything nuts and bolts together quite nicely. They tell stories that are simple, and they still have Josh Matthews on commentary. But it's working. Now, the other side of the business is the fact that TNA is kind of for sale, we think, kind of. And this next part of the podcast will be entirely pure speculation, because no one really knows. In typical TNA style, things have come out and in things have been instantly denied. So here's where we think it all lays down at the moment, unless Chelsea or Marcus can add anything to this story, and I'll give you the rough outline. In the run-up to Bound for Glory, Billy Corgan was reportedly the most interested party in buying TNA. Sinclair Broadcasting had also shown interest. They're the owners of Ring of Honor, who desperately need product for their new golf channel that they've bought. They're trying to turn into a regular sports channel, so they need product to be able to sell that. And WWE had also put in apparently mild interest in buying the tape library of the company, though no one knows what they would do with the company if they bought it. As Ollie Davis has reported on the news this week, this has been quite a fractious conversation that's gone over the weeks. On Monday at the TV tapings, Dixie Carter had a team meeting. This was reported that she mentioned that there had been a power struggle for the control of the company, which was interesting because Billy Corgan was stood right next to her at the time, apparently, and that she would never sell never sell TNA to WWE, and everyone's jobs were safe, which is obviously a great thing to say when you've got a TV taping going ahead and you need your guys to be actually on point and working very hard for you. A very sensible leadership thing to do. We haven't heard much since then. There's been other rumors and other things that have gone off, like customer satisfaction reports from WWE asking if customers would be interested in watching independent wrestling companies on an expanded version of the network. There has been other rumors going around as well, but generally, as far as I can tell, and as far as I can make out, and I don't really know, but this is kind of what we know, is that Billy Corgan is likely to buy the company as is an ongoing concern. There's been rumors that WWE will take over the tape library, which would allow Billy Corgan to rebrand entirely, which I think is probably not necessarily a bad thing. And it seems like Panda Energy and Dixie Carter are done with the wrestling business. Am I right, Marcus? Is that about where we're at?
Yeah, that's about where we're at. I think, you know, Corgan is heavily invested in trying to take over the reins and really has some ideas to kind of rebrand and take this company in a different direction. But he's kind of, you know, done all he can, and he's kind of just waiting for the shoe to drop, or, you know, maybe perhaps a certain former president to kind of move aside and, you know, finally get out the way. So hopefully, again, they bought themselves some time. Hopefully they can finally get all this stuff sorted, because it would really suck for yet another alternative to be wiped away. And, the library to go to WWE and what have you, and we would have to go back over there. So, you know, I'm just really, you know, my fingers are crossed for these guys to really pull everything together behind the scenes and allow these guys to have, these performers to have some place to still continue to work and not have to be creatively stifled as they would be elsewhere. So, you know, hopefully, again, you know, as TNA fans, we just got to hang in there, as me and Tony always say, and just hope for the best. But I do appreciate a guy like Corgan who really is trying to put his best foot forward and really trying to bring some things new creatively, wise to the product. But, you know, again, he's invested as much as he can. He just, you know, he needs the help. So hopefully he gets it.
What do you make of this story, Chelsea?
I do not want WWE to buy TNA and own TNA wholesale. If they buy the tape library, I'm totally fine with that. If somebody else buys the company, and Corgan seems like he cares a whole lot, and a lot of fans who are friends of mine who watch TNA regularly have said that they think that the things he's done in the time that he's been there have been good. So it sounds like that would be a good move. To echo what Marcus said, I don't want TNA to go out of business. I get frustrated actually with the internet wrestling fan community when they talk about it sort of gleefully, like TNA sucks, they should go under, because I think that if WWE is the only promotion that has a big TV presence, that's really bad for wrestling as a whole. Yeah. Wrestling as an art form needs as many places to work as possible so that wrestlers have other options for them if WWE isn't, for one reason or another, an option. I realize that they're not the only two promotions with TV contracts, but I don't like the Ring of Honor TV program. I don't think it accurately represents the feeling of being at a Ring of Honor show and how much fun that can potentially be. I find the TV program to be like mostly unwatchable. And Lucha Underground is awesome, but it's one type of a wrestling program. Like, it's a week-to-week serialized story that's taped in advance. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But, you know, it's a different type of show than TNA is trying to be. I think TNA is an important place in the wrestling landscape, and I hope that they manage to salvage the company. I hope that they manage to find the right person, if it's not Billy Corgan, to buy the company and rebrand it from the ground up.
I have to echo what both of you said. I know for a fact that when this video goes on YouTube, there will be comments underneath the video saying, TNA sucks, I hope it closes down. And for those people, I would like to say this. TNA is a company that employs people. TNA is a company that produces wrestling matches, which we all enjoy because we're wrestling fans. And I don't care if you're a New Japan fan, a WWE fan, a CMLL fan, an ICW fan, we're wrestling fans. And wrestling fans should support wrestling, because the more wrestling there is, the better it will get. And this thing that we love and enjoy will be so much better. And TNA is needed in this company. And Vince McMahon needs TNA. Okay? That sounds stupid, doesn't it? But actually, no, it's not. Vince McMahon needs TNA. He needs a place to send people he doesn't need anymore. He needs a place to pick people up that he hasn't seen yet. He needs a place that, well, to be honest with you, can stop a monopolies investigation. Even if it's stuff like that. This sounds stupid, but it's true. You know, I'm pretty sure that Vince McMahon, who's a very, very, very smart man, despite all the things I've said about him in the last 4 years as a wrestling journalist, he is very smart. I genuinely think that Vince McMahon would be very, very, very stupid to, like, close down TNA entirely, because it's nice to have options.
And Vince does his best when he has somebody to compete against.
Yes, this is true.
Yeah, always.
And at the end of the day, variety is the spice of life. And the less you have, the more boring it is.
Yeah, exactly. Right then. Well, that closes our coverage of Bound for Glory. Next week, we'll be looking at New Japan Pro Wrestling in historic format with me and Chelsea, because we actually recorded that show before this one. And so I hope you enjoy that. Marcus will be back with us soon. Thank you very much for joining us, Marcus.
Thank you for having me. Great show. It was great to, you know, finally get around the horn with Chelsea. So
it was fun.
It's been an interesting hour, certainly. And thank you very much for Chelsea as well. That's at Chelsea Comics on at Chelsea Comics on Twitter, and shoulders_up on Twitter as well for shouldersup.net. Oh, I got it all right earlier. Didn't get it right this time. Thank you very much for listening. Please do listen to the Wrestle Talk Podcast Network, where you can find the Squash and the Finn Martin Report, as well as all the Troopany shows. And have listened to us on Wrestle Plus for $4.99 a month, where you get loads of cool content from the NDW show. Speaking of other wrestling companies that are an option, you can go watch their stuff. You can listen to all our shoot interviews. It's really, really cool stuff. Please also, can you, write us an iTunes review? That'd be really, really nice, because it helps with our algorithms and helps more people listen to the show. And also make an appeal for a SoundCloud review, because no one's reviewed us on SoundCloud. That would be really cool. So if someone
can review things on SoundCloud.
You can review things on SoundCloud. You can actually review things specifically in a track point. So if there's a point where you disagree with us and you want to make it clear where you disagree with us, you can actually put a comment in the track point.
Wow.
There you go. So put some comments in track points. I'm going to come back to it next week, and there'll be loads of them. And I'll answer everyone, dang it, because I'm a professional. Thank you very much for listening to the Troopany Show, and we appreciate your listening of us. Take care, and we'll see you next week. Bye!